Hey everybody, Rob Maurer here. Welcome back to Tesla Daily. Hope everybody had a great Memorial Day weekend. Today we are talking about a new interview with Drew Baglino, Tesla's SVP of Powertrain and Energy Engineering. We've also got updates out of Shanghai, news on the Edra Gigapress that we've been talking about. We've also got a SpaceX update and a few other things as well. Pretty quiet start to the week in the markets, with Tesla today finishing down just 0.2% to $758.26, while the NASDAQ was down 0.4%. Quick look at the calendar, as we do head into June already tomorrow. There should be some economic reports for May coming out throughout this week, and then we will get the core CPI report for May next week. Looks like that'll be scheduled for Friday morning. One other really quick note on the stock, Mizuho did come out with an updated note on Tesla today. They have reiterated their buy rating and their $1,300 per share price target after a visit out to Fremont, just like we had talked about with Credit Suisse last week. Doesn't look like anything too new to report with this note, kind of just the same stuff about Giga Shanghai being down in Q2, but hopefully re-ramping, and being joined by Berlin and Texas. So nothing major there, but does mark the second time in as many weeks that we have seen analysts on the higher end of the price target scale hold those price targets steady. All right, next let's talk about Shanghai. We're speaking broadly here, but the city has continued to move towards a fuller reopening. Of course, we have talked about this going in phases, and it looks like as of June 1st, Shanghai is going to make significant changes, returning things to much closer to normal after cases have continued to decline, only 29 new cases on Monday. Specifically, on Sunday, Shanghai announced a so-called action plan for accelerating economic recovery and revitalization, outlining their plans to support this continued recovery. So there are a few sections in here that are relevant to Tesla. The plan specifically mentions that there will be support for automobile and integrated circuit enterprises and efforts to realize the coordinated resumption of work of upstream and downstream enterprises in the industrial chain and supply chain, and efforts to steadily improve the production rate of enterprises. So no major surprise there. Manufacturing has been a top priority for Shanghai as they have moved through some of these phases. They also note that they will smooth domestic and international logistics and transportation channels, and will be supporting foreign-funded enterprises to resume production and operation. They also note that they intend to vigorously promote automobile consumption, and purchase of pure EVs will be given a financial subsidy of 10,000 RMB per vehicle. So that's about $1,500, and Tesla seems to already be promoting this as of June 1st, so in place very quickly, though it does look like someone would need to trade in another non-Tesla vehicle to get this subsidy. I'm not sure exactly how long this incentive is planned for, and it might seem like, does Tesla even really need this? Does more orders help them? And maybe not, but one thing more orders can do is it helps Tesla be able to select higher trim vehicles to deliver first that can help average selling prices. And it probably increases the propensity for people to order more expensive vehicles in the first place than they might have otherwise. So while Tesla might not be hurting for orders, it can still help the business. Anyway, I think the major takeaway here is that it now seems quite clear that Shanghai is moving very aggressively to a return to normalcy, but also to make up for lost time. And if cases do stay down, which is the obvious wild card, that could lead to some really, really strong productivity. So plenty of things to be excited about there. And then also on Shanghai, but on Giga Shanghai specifically, we did have a report from Reuters saying that Tesla has, quote, restored weekly output at its Shanghai plant to nearly 70% of the level, which it had operated at before the city's COVID-19 lockdown, according to two people familiar with the matter, end quote. Now, this might seem to conflict with what we had talked about Friday, which was that Shanghai had hit 2,500 vehicles per day, but it's not necessarily conflicting because this could be referring to a weekly output number. That could actually sound about right for last week, since Tesla until midweek wasn't ramped up to that double shift. So we'll have to wait and see, but we should get a better understanding of this when the May production numbers are published by the CPCA, and that should happen sometime later next week. All right, next up, we've got more information on the new 9,000-ton Gigapress casting machine from Edra Group that they have been teasing over the last few days we've been talking about. They've got a new video out on that this morning. As we approach their open house event for this machine in early June, Elon did end up replying to this video on Twitter, simply saying Cybertruck body. So there we go, now confirmed that this 9,000-ton machine is for Tesla, which we thought likely based on the colors from before, but now also confirmed for the Cybertruck, which previously Tesla had said was going to be an 8,000-ton casting machine. So looks like when that was mentioned a year or two ago, that has now been bumped up to the next level with this 9,000-ton casting machine. The open house event, which again, not necessarily so open, it's an invite event, but that starts on June 6th for Edra, so hopefully we'll learn a little bit more about this at that time, but they do say on that invitation that the event will include tests of the machine, so it looks like it is very close to being ready to go, which is very exciting for the Cybertruck. We should probably look back and see the timeline from casting machine install to first deliveries for previous Model Y ramp-ups. Not that that's going to be entirely conclusive, but might give us a little bit more context on the Cybertruck production date. All right, next up, we've got a really interesting interview with Tesla SVP Drew Baglino at his alma mater, Stanford. I would definitely recommend watching this entire thing. I'll put the link in the show notes. It's only about 40 minutes, pretty information rich, but I will hit the highlights here. It really centered around the, no surprise, electrification of the automobile and energy industries and Drew's perspective on how that process is going, where things go from here. And Drew's thoughts were basically that he's really excited that the essentially collective psyche of humanity is now on board with electrifying everything, but there's a lot more to do from a regulatory perspective, more on that in a second, but there is momentum there. He made some points implying that this was becoming more important right now because historically the battery industry has sort of been able to meet its needs as a result of other industries. So the raw materials and the supply chain for the level of battery consumption that there is today has just kind of existed. He mentioned specifically lithium and graphite sort of being side businesses for petrochemical companies, a side business that in the past they may have viewed as just kind of a little bit of an annoyance to their day-to-day operations, but something that could support a much smaller battery industry that is now becoming much larger scale, and that brings new needs. So Drew said basically about that situation, quote, "We're not really there anymore. We need to invest in our own everything," end quote. And also noted that that was the ideal time to reevaluate what you're investing in. He also noted that with the growth the industry was seeing, wasn't really clear if this was an industry comment or a Tesla comment, that, quote, "We are at the point where the exponential growth curve becomes really painful," end quote. So that's starting to approach the law of large numbers. It's easy to double from 5 units to 10 units, but going from 1 million to 2 million, that's way harder. And again, brings its own set of challenges. It did kind of remind me, though, of what we had talked about last week with just this being a very interesting time period, because while maintaining those growth rates is getting more difficult as those numbers become larger, it also speaks to the significance of impact that we are now starting to see become much greater. And it also brings along its own economic incentives to shift massive amounts of capital towards things that are assisting with this growth and away from the things that are being impacted. I mean, perfect example, we heard Elon basically begging people to get into the lithium business on the last earnings call. Anyway, that led into a lot of conversation on mining to keep pace with the growth, Drew noting that the fundamental bottleneck was not gigafactories or battery factories. It really is raw materials, he said, highlighting that the biggest risk area at the moment is lithium, noting that maybe sodium can help with that for grid storage, because if that becomes a viable alternative that'll ease the demand for lithium, it can go into vehicles then. But on the factories, he gave an example that for a battery factory, maybe it takes 2.5 years from beginning permitting to ramping production. But for a lithium mine, the last lithium mine in Nevada took 10 years to get permitted. So it seemed to be that Drew was implying, and I think I would agree with what I assess his implication to be, that this is where government intervention could be very, very positive. Moving urgently to improve that process could have huge ramifications. So it's good to see Tesla talking about this, and this is why it's so important that Tesla has such a long-term view. They've been thinking about getting to 20 million vehicles per year for at least the last 2 years, and probably quite a bit longer than that. So anyway, the conversation about the supply chain brought up the fact that a lot of this is currently happening in China, and why that is, what that looks like longer term, and Drew had some really interesting comments on this. I just want to play the clip here. And he also alluded to some interesting details on Berlin and Texas.
Ultimately, it does make sense for there to be a local supply chain for energy storage on every continent. And, you know, similar to every other new economy thing, China has very well, does a fantastic job of, like, investing in what is necessary to get the job done, whether it's solar or batteries or otherwise. And the rest of the world lets them do it, and you know, the industry around that sees that happening and sort of, like, follows the capital, and then you get what you get. I think there's no reason why China is the only place that battery materials are largely refined and synthesized today. Like, there's not a good reason, right? It just is where the capital has gone because of government intervention. You know, American manufacturing, European manufacturing, Asia, you know, Australia, it doesn't matter. Like, everybody can do this stuff. This isn't like nuclear technology that's held in lock and key and governed by a treaty. So everybody should be doing it. And I think with the general awareness again in the public psyche that this is coming, I expect more and more policymakers to be intentionally attracting local capital to do the mining, refining, the battery making locally, which I'm 100% supportive of. And Tesla has been doing it. I mean, we're putting money where our mouth is. Huge 100 gigawatt hour battery in factory in Texas with cathode there. Same thing in Berlin. Like, we're and recycling in both of those places. Like, We're doing what we can do. Everybody is excited to do that, I think.
So I liked hearing Drew's take on that, and you might have caught there at the end, he mentioned a 100 gigawatt hour battery facility at Texas. Said the same for Berlin. Might not have meant the same capacity and maybe just the same intent. But good to hear Drew mention the capacity, and of course we know Tesla is looking to buy other 4680 cells too. Plus basically all their current production being fulfilled by 18650s or 2170s. So yeah, a lot of batteries on the way. Alright, a few other quick notes on the interview. They were kind of just talking about grid storage in general. Drew noted that one of the challenges with grid storage is building everything around the battery to last 30 years, not just getting a million mile battery or something like that. It's actually the other components that sometimes can end up being more difficult to get right, and really just everything working all together as planned for that long of a time horizon is a challenge. They got into the example of the original Roadster. They were pessimistic on how long the battery cells themselves would last electrochemically, but they were over-optimistic on some of those other factors. Pack sealants, reaction to vibration, things like this. Things that are hard to simulate, but that they have learned a lot from over the years. Keep that in mind, because we'll come back to that in a second when we talk about solar, but Drew also did say on the supercharger network, he is responsible for managing it. He said that Tesla does run the supercharger network as its own business, so its own P&L, profit and loss, capital expenditures, etc. And that was really the reason that they didn't pursue battery swapping. It just didn't really make sense. And we've talked about, you know, my thoughts on that as well. And I think those are well aligned with the reasons that Drew stated too. As for solar, Drew was asked about the solar roof, and his basic thoughts were that the shingle itself, the solar shingle, is awesome. It's super easy to build and not expensive at all, he said. But that with the solar roof, Tesla spent a lot of time on that shingle, making sure it was easy to build, things like that, but not enough time on the stuff around the shingle, so that the focus is now on making the roof job in its entirety as simple as possible. So not terribly surprising, we've kind of known that, but it is good to have that reinforcement that the actual product itself, from a technical level, seems to be in a good spot. It's also kind of funny because that's very similar to the situation that we just talked about, the Roadster, where the areas they spent the most time focusing on are strong, but then some of those other things kind of creep in and make it weaker overall. They got onto this topic of the solar roof by one of the audience members asking if Tesla was still committed to it. He said he can't really comment on their commitment because he's not directly responsible for the solar roof, but basically that it should happen and the shingle is good, so, quote, it'll happen, end quote. So again, very solid interview, and I would definitely recommend it. The link for that will be down in the description. Last thing for today then, just a quick update on SpaceX. The Federal Aviation Administration was supposed to today release the programmatic environmental assessment for SpaceX's orbital test flight of Starship. I believe this has already been delayed a couple of times and now is delayed again, now updated for June 13th. So not too much further, but I know a lot of people are keeping an eye on that, so wanted to pass along that update as well. All right, that is it for today then. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you're subscribed and signed up for notifications. You can also find me on Twitter at Tesla Podcast. And we'll see you tomorrow for the Tuesday, June 1st episode of Tesla Daily. Thank you.